Over the course of the week, I worked up about four different homilies. I will spare you. The first one being the most obvious, of course, an injunction, a kind of moralizing injunction to greater generosity. But that's not faithful to the meaning of the text, I don't think. I'm going to read a passage from a commentary on Mark, which I think does do justice to the meaning of the text. But first of all, it's important to notice in the last 20 or 30 years among scripture scholars, there is now what is called a social scientific understanding of the scriptures. It used to be, you know, you take language, or you take the theology, or there are a whole bunch of ways, or you take the dogmatic positions of the church and read all of that into the text. But as I said, within the past two or three decades, people are much more aware that the social and anthropological situation of first century Palestine is very different than ours. If you do want to do justice to what these texts are about, then you have to read it within that historical context. The first thing to be aware of is the position of widows in that world. A widow was a non-person. A woman was only had an identity in terms of her connection with her husband. When her husband died, she vanished, literally. She vanished as a member of society. And so what this first part of this passage from Mark is about is that some scribes, men, of course, if the husband died, the men, these scribal men, would have to take over and administer the property of the husband. And often enough, simply rip off the widows. So that's the difficulty. That's what Jesus is talking about. They devour widows' houses, and for the sake of appearances, say long prayers. And again, it's always important to keep in mind that Jesus was a lay person. Jesus was not part of the religious establishment. Huh? Jesus was a hillbilly, as a matter of fact, from up north. His accent, his Aramaic would have been accented, and people would know exactly where he's from. Just like if you hear somebody from Georgia, you know where they're from. So what about this lady and her tiny, tiny offering into temple treasury? What's going on there? Let me read you just a small paragraph that Chad Myers in this wonderful book called Binding the Strong Man. Political reading of Mark's story of Jesus. He quotes another Markan scholar to this effect. The story of the woman and her two pennies, her two small coin, the story does not provide a pious contrast to the conduct of the scribes in the preceding section, as is the customary view. Rather, it provides a further illustration of the ills of official devotion. Jesus saying is not a penetrating insight on the measuring of gifts. It's a lament. Jesus condemns the value system that motivates her action, namely that she should give the last money she had to the temple. And he condemns the people who conditioned her to do it. In other words, as we find over and over in the career of Jesus, this massive critique of his own religion, of his own Judaism. We talked before about the cleansing of the temple. What was that about? It was not about selling cows and pigeons in the temple or having lots of money hanging around. It was rather that the priests simply cheated the farmers up north by buying up their property and simply reducing them to penury. See, it's much safer to think of Jesus as, you know, like the Zephyrly figure of Jesus in the Gospel of Jesus, you know, wear the white dress. Everybody else is running around kind of grungy, but Jesus has this nice white dress, this long blonde hair with beautiful blue eyes and speaks with an Oxford accent. We'd like to think of Jesus that way. It's comforting. It's safe. Rather than to see Jesus, as he clearly was, a really disruptive figure, both politically, give to Caesar what Caesar, to God what's God. Anybody who would say that in the midst of the Roman Empire was asking for trouble. And religiously. The criticism he issues over and over and over again about the hypocrisy of the priesthood, the Sadducees, and the Pharisees. That brings it, I think, a little closer to the bone. You know, that certainly brings it closer to what Jesus was about. That's why he got killed, by the way. His death was a political execution on the part of the Jewish authorities who were tired. You know, Caiaphas' great line, it's better that one man die for the people than everybody gets killed, because the Romans get really mad at us. So, there you have the historical artifact. But then what do we do with that? I think it is an encouragement to look critically at our own religiosity, you know, and at the official religiosity of the church. You know, there's a real and, to me, very disturbing pattern. The Pope, the present Pope, has said, we are not going to be a church of no. The only people he says yes to are anti-Semites and disaffected Anglicans. There's something wrong with this picture, you know. He does say no to progressive theologians. He does that and has done that for 30 years. And we are a church of no. Look at the response of 80 American bishops to the Obama appearance at Notre Dame. Something is wrong with us where we stand in the world as accusers rather than as penitents. It's only as penitents that we are the real church. Bishops who hide pedophile priests and then trying to exculpate themselves. So this does have some kind of personal resonance, I think, for us today. First of all, of course, self-criticism. That's where it's supposed to go. Somebody, in a kind of corny way, says, you know, whenever you point your finger, there's one finger going out, but there's three pointing to yourself. That's the way it ought to work. Self-criticism ought to go hand in hand with criticism of others. So that's what we're called to greater faithfulness, to taking up seriously the radical demands of the gospel, of this man Jesus, a clarity of vision, a generosity of heart. That's what we're called to.